From WAMC in Albany, this is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine about New York State government and politics. Your host is David Gustina, with political commentary by Dr. Alan Shartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
Coming up this week, Governor Cuomo is touring New York State, promoting his ideas, including a $15 minimum wage. Our political observer, Alan Shartok, shares his thoughts on his conversation with State GOP Committee Chair Ed Cox. And New York launches a new mobile app to connect veterans and their families with programs and services. Those stories and more on the Legislative Gazette. Governor Andrew Cuomo has been spending more time on the road than at the state capitol in recent weeks on an election-style campaign to promote his ideas, including a $15 minimum wage. We get more from the Legislative Gazette's Karen DeWitt.
It may be the height of the budget season at the state capitol, but Governor Cuomo seems more in campaign mode. He's been traveling the state to promote his plans to raise the minimum wage and get paid family leave. The governor has hired a bus emblazoned with campaign-style slogans, which he's been riding for partial journeys from New York City to upstate, disembarking for rallies. In Kingston, where he was introduced by the leader of the state health care workers union, 1199, and local Democratic elected leaders, he sounded themes that Cuomo has been focusing on for several months now.
Raise the minimum wage to $15. Do it today.
Cuomo's also holding telephone town meetings, soliciting participants through robocalls.
Hello, this is Governor Andrew Cuomo, and I'm inviting you to join me for a live telephone town hall tomorrow at 7 p.m.
When the governor is not campaigning for the minimum wage hike, he's holding rallies for a partial paid family leave bill.
Good morning!
It would give workers up to 12 weeks of leave at up to two-thirds of their pay when fully phased in. Employees contribute around $50 a year to a pool to fund the program. And, just like any good political campaign, Cuomo has developed a basic stump speech with talking points. In Harlem, he said,
"This is about a fight for basic fairness in this state. That's what this is about."
Later, in Buffalo,
"And this legislative agenda is going to be about a fight for fairness for New York's working families. Because that's what this is really about."
Cuomo has also been telling audiences that he's aiming for something higher than simply getting legislation passed in New York.
"But then we're going to take this justice agenda, this fairness agenda, and we're going to say to this nation, we did it in New York, you can do it anywhere in this country."
And he seems at times to be channeling Democratic candidate for president Bernie Sanders.
"And you should be angry, and I should be angry, because an injustice against one is an injustice against all."
The mention of national campaigning has led some to speculate that the governor is setting himself up for a possible presidential run in 2020, should a Democratic candidate not win in November. It spurred a column in the New York Post. When Cuomo was asked by a reporter whether he was planning for a potential run for higher office, he vigorously denied it.
"I've given it zero thought. Is that clear enough as an answer?"
"That's pretty
clear. Nada, niente, scatta, zero."
The governor's political opposition, the state's Republican Party, has been speaking out against the $15 an hour minimum wage, saying it's too costly for businesses, especially smaller employers, and would be a job killer. Party Chair Ed Cox says it was only around a year ago that the governor himself expressed doubts about the viability of a $15 minimum wage.
"He's adopted New York City union's slogan, fight for 15, simply as a slogan, and turned it into government policy for his personal political purposes.
Cox says Cuomo is trying to shore up support among his liberal-leaning base, following a significant primary challenge in 2014 from law professor Zephyr Teachout.
Thank you and God bless you.
Governor Cuomo is not having any trouble convincing his audiences of the worth of his plans, but he will in the next month have to get Republicans in the state Senate to agree to the $15 phase-in for the minimum wage, as well as a paid family leave program. GOP senators have said they want to do paid family leave, but have been noncommittal on the minimum wage hike. In Albany, I'm Karen DeWitt.
Joining us now, Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Shartok. Well, Alan, or Karen DeWitt, reporting this week about Governor Cuomo touring the state in his drive for the $15 minimum wage, that is. You spoke to the head of the Republican State Committee, Ed Cox, this week for your Capital Connection program. He's not too happy about this, not surprisingly. He says, you know, unskilled workers get supplements from the federal government, from the state. It nearly doubles their salaries, which could be about $20,000 to $40,000, and that the governor really needs to go out on Main Street and talk to small businesses. They're hurting, and the state will lose hundreds of thousands of jobs because of this.
David, you're right. That is what Ed Cox, Nixon's son-in-law, you know, had to say. And he is, of course, leading the charge against the $15 minimum wage. He says, as you say, that this will ruin business in New York and that people just getting by who may be paying $9 or $10 or $11 will now have to pay $15 and it'll put them out of business and it will actually cost jobs. That's what he's saying. And he is going for broke, I'll tell you. He really is taking every opportunity to say it. Look. $15, it seems to me, is a fair price. And you can't really say that part of your salary is any benefit you may be getting from the government. It's ridiculous. You know, your salary is your salary. But that is his pitch. He's making it forcefully, and he's going all around to do it. And believe me, there will be people in small businesses and others who will agree with him.
You talked with him about Donald Trump and the issue of what the Republicans will do if he gets all the way to the convention and seeking the nomination. Would the Republicans stand behind him?
Well, he said yes. Basically, he said he would be for whoever wins. And when I said, well, who are you for, Ed Cox? Who are you for? He wouldn't tell me, you know, but I don't think that there are many attractive choices for moderate Republicans, particularly, you know, middle range Republicans who are in New York State. What are they going to do? Go for Cruz, who is a, you know, right wing zealot? Or are they going to go for a guy like Rubio, who certainly is establishment? That would be my bet. That is exactly who the New York people will go for. When the moment of truth arrives, I'll bet it's going to be Rubio because I don't see anybody else who they can stand for. It's pretty clear to me that Trump is going to be the candidate on the Republican side, or at least he's going to go into the convention with the most votes. And if they want him out, and boy, they don't like him, they're going to have to show their true colors and say, this is not so much a democracy as we once told people it was.
You also talked about the current issue of replacing Antonin Scalia on the Supreme Court.
Well, that's right. There is an obvious defensive move here on the part of the Republican Party not to allow Obama to have his choice. Now, what the Republicans like Ed Cox are saying is, hey, you know, we could go back in history and we'll see that, you know, Joe Biden said a similar thing when the shoe was on the other foot. But you know what? Even if that were true, and there does seem to be some major difference in the way all of that was said and done and when, it is not the question of anybody else having done the wrong thing. It's the question is, how can the Republican Party say that even though the Constitution says that the president nominates and that the Senate either approves or disapproves, how can the Republican Party say that we're just not going to do that? We're not going to do our job. We're not going to say an up or down vote. And I think what they've done is to position themselves in such a way as that they look anti-democratic, small d. And as a result of that, I think they're in some real trouble with the potential electorate that has to say to them, did you guys behave well during this thing? And I think the answer is going to be no. Now, look, David, what this is really all about is that they just, like a two-year-old in a tantrum, are stamping their feet and we say, we've had 5-4 all these years, and we're not giving it up. Even if Hillary Clinton gets elected and puts another three judges on there, we'll have to live with that. But right now, we're going for broke.
You also had an interesting conversation with Ed Cox about whether there was an establishment.
Right. Well, of course, there's an establishment. What is the establishment? They'll come back and say, it's like pornography in the Supreme Court. We'll know it when we see it. And I'll know it when I see it, and I certainly see it right now. The establishment of the people who've been running the country and who've had all of this power up until now. And along comes a Trump, and he threatens to upset the apple cart, as does Bernie Sanders in his election. And that is very threatening. In the Sanders case, the Times and others are saying that Hillary's got it locked up. But we'll see.
We turn to a story that has to do with water and water supply. A New York City law firm has filed a class action lawsuit, Alan, alleging negligence by two companies led to the chemical contamination of the water supply in Rensselaer County village of Hoosick Falls, New York. Saint-Gobain and Honeywell International are named in the lawsuit. And we're talking about someone named Aaron Brockovich.
Well, the famous Aaron Brockovich of the film of the same name, and who went out and really has sued effectively. And so she's got to put fear into the hearts of anybody who might be vulnerable to this kind of lawsuit. I'm not a scientist. I can't tell you what the fact pattern is in a case like this. But when we see Flint, Michigan, or we see Rensselaer County, and we see that the water supply has not been kept up the way that it ought to, and that there may be toxic elements in some of it, and it's maybe leading to all kinds of health problems with people, I wouldn't be surprised to see this opening up as a huge debate in the United States about the quality of water. And that goes directly to the concept of infrastructure, because the infrastructure in this country is crumbling. I was astounded when I started to see that some of these water pipes that they're looking at were Civil War vintage. Can you imagine a pipe that was put in the ground in the Civil War when Abraham Lincoln was alive and now is still carrying water? Well, things change. We don't allow our cars to have effluents that are considered unsafe. Maybe we have to do that with water, and maybe we have to take some of the money from our extraordinary defense budget and say, hey, we have to fix the bridges and the water.
Legislative Gazette political observer Alan Chartok. You are listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. Farmers and agricultural leaders from New York, Vermont, and New England gathered in Burlington this week for an annual conference for dairy producers. The Legislative Gazette's Pat Bradley reports sustainability was a key issue at the gathering.
The Vermont Dairy Producers Conference was founded in 1999. Organized by farmers, it focuses on the most pressing issues they are facing. More than 300 had registered by the start of the conference, which included sessions on the family farm's sustainable future, how to assure a generational transfer of farm ownership, dairy genomics, and animal care. Vermont Dairy Producers Association Chair Reg Shapit has co-owned his dairy farm for 35 years and is a founder of the conference.
As time has gone on, we've recognized that there's more of a need to discuss things like farm transfers and more of the whole personnel part of the operations, whether it's getting the next generation in, whether it's dealing with employees, though we still discuss topics that have to deal with the cows themselves and sometimes the cropping part of it. We find ourselves needing to discuss the personnel part of it. And I think that's because the operations are getting a little bigger as time goes on, and that's just the way the industry is headed. And so there are more people working together. It's becoming more of a team effort.
Shapit notes that a key concern for farmers in the Northeast is the generational sustainability of their farms.
Dairy operations now are high capital. We're talking hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars. And so a lot of times if a farm doesn't move on to the next generation, there's a financial component to it that prevents it from doing so. So it takes a lot of prior planning, talking to one another, and by that I mean generations to generation and not just going on as business as usual every day. There has to be plans on how the farms are going to transfer to the next generation. That's as important as the crops that you grow and the way that you manage your cattle.
The Miner Institute is an agricultural research center in northern New York. Dairy Outreach Coordinator Wanda Emmerich is excited to see discussed a broad range of topics, including reproduction, economics, calf health, attracting employees, and sustainability.
The program and the variety of topics gives the producers some additional tools to work with. There's a lot of new technology, new uses of technology. Farmers have a lot of tools available to them in production agriculture, and they need to make the most of what those tools are in order to have the best margins. The margins in farming are fairly narrow, so we need to be able to make the best profit that we can on what we're working with so that we can ensure that our high-quality product is produced at a reasonable cost so that we can stay in business.
There are about 850 dairy farms in Vermont, hosting 134,000 dairy cows. According to the Vermont Agency of Agriculture, dairy brings about $3 million into the state's economy daily.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Pat Bradley.
New York has launched a new mobile app intended to connect veterans and their families with programs and services. The Legislative Gazette's Lucas Willard reports.
The New York State Division of Veterans Affairs unveiled its new mobile app to help the state's 900,000 vets connect to important state and federal programs. With a simple download, users can get assistance finding housing, getting a job, finding education, navigating benefits, and connecting with the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs. Gene Leparco, an Air Force veteran who served in the Vietnam War, works with a number of local veterans organizations. He recommends all vets get acquainted with the services available to them and says the app is an easy way to do it.
I think that anybody getting out of the service should contact their counties, and if not that, check on to their own state to see what's available to them for housing, education, medical, and so forth.
The app is being celebrated by leaders on the left and right. Democrat Angelo Santabarbara, a member of the State Assembly Committee on Veterans Affairs, said connecting veterans with services has been a major topic of conversation at committee hearings.
There's so many services, so many benefits. Sometimes you either don't know about it or you're having a problem finding the most efficient way to get to those services. So this app is a first step.
Santa Barbara, a veteran of the U.S. Army Reserve, said he often has his own questions about finding what services he's eligible for.
It gets you moving in the right direction. It directs you to the appropriate department to ask those questions. So it makes it more efficient.
In addition to providing links to agency websites, the app also has a Near Me feature. An individual anywhere in New York can find the addresses and contact information for the nearest Division of Veterans Affairs field offices and County Veterans Service Agency offices. It also provides news on the latest updates on state and federal programs. Republican Kathy Marchione, a member of the State Senate Standing Committee on Veterans, Homeland Security, and Military Affairs, also had praise for the app.
They need more of these good ideas such as this app. And we owe so much to our veterans who defended our liberty and keep us safe. I think this is just a terrific new approach to being able to find services.
The app is free and available for Android and iOS devices. For links and more information, visit WAMC.org.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lucas Willard.
You're listening to the Legislative Gazette, a program about New York State government and politics. I'm David Gustina. With the new Tappan Zee Bridge now about 2 years from completion, talks continue about what the bridge will be called. One Hudson Valley assemblyman wants to see it named in honor of veterans, while others prefer it pays respect to a late governor. The Legislative Gazette's Allison Dunn with more.
New York Governor Andrew Cuomo rallied in Rockland County Monday for paid family leave, and in his opening remarks, he mentioned an unrelated topic.
We came across that Tappan Zee Bridge coming from Westchester just now, and to see it rising from the river after decades of talking about that bridge, there was more conversation about that bridge. And now to see it actually happening.
And conversation continues about the bridge that connects Rockland and Westchester counties on a few fronts, including its name. The subject arose when President Obama visited Westchester County in May 2014, praising Cuomo and area congressional representatives for making the replacement bridge possible.
Thanks to their outstanding efforts, workers are building a replacement, the first new bridge in New York in 50 years. It's called the New New York Bridge, which is fine as a name, but for your next bridge, you should come up with something a little more fresh.
Some lawmakers have come up with something. Republican Assemblyman Kieran Lawler says the bridge should be named the Sergeant Joseph Lem Post 9/11 Veterans Memorial Bridge to honor the men and women who have protected the country since 9/11. Lem is the New York City police detective and Air National Guardsman from Westchester County who was killed by a suicide bomber in Afghanistan in December. He was a 15-year veteran of the New York Police Department who was on the job during the 9/11 attacks. Lawler says he has received lots of feedback on the name. Some people do not feel one veteran should be singled out, but do like the post 9/11 Veterans Memorial Bridge part. Lawler explains why he does single out Lem.
I think having an individual helps to kind of get, make things real and concrete to people. So you can, he represents a whole generation of first responders and military people. So there others are reflected by his name, plus the second part of the name, the post 9/11.
Lawler says naming the bridge in honor of veterans is appropriate for a region that houses Camp Smith, also in Westchester County, and West Point in Orange County.
The other half of the feedback that I get is no more politicians. I couldn't agree more. Nobody wants to name it after a politician.
Democratic Congresswoman Nita Lowey does, though, points out her respect for Sergeant Lem, noting she took Lem's widow as her guest to Obama's State of the Union address in January.
I do think that he can be honored and should be honored, and all those who gave their lives should be honored, and there's so many different ways. We think of those who lost their lives every day, but I think it's very appropriate to name the bridge after Mario Cuomo, a great governor of the state of New York.
Lowey, whose district includes both the Rockland and Westchester sides of the bridge, worked for Mario Cuomo when he was governor. In the past few years, others have urged naming the bridge in honor of the late Pete Seeger, given his work on the Hudson River. Meanwhile, Rockland County Democratic Assemblyman Ken Zabrowski has a few opinions on names.
I've heard opinions about naming it after some veterans. I think that would be a great thing, like a Veterans Memorial Bridge or something like that. I think that's a great way we can honor the men and women that have fought for our country.
But he's open to another idea.
I'm certainly a big fan of Mario Cuomo, so I think he would be a very worthy recipient as well.
State Senator David Carlucci, an independent Democrat whose district includes the Rockland side of the bridge, is not thinking about names.
Well, I think we should have a robust discussion about what the bridge should be called. But more importantly, we have to figure out how we're going to fund it to make sure that tolls are affordable on the Tappan Zee Bridge. So before we even talk about really settling on a name, we have to settle on a plan to keep tolls low for commuters in the Hudson Valley. If we have a beautiful bridge with a beautiful name, but we can't afford to cross it, that will devastate our economy.
The current span is named for a politician. It's really the Governor Malcolm Wilson Tappan Zee Bridge.
For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Allison Dunn.
And that about does it for this week's show. We had help from the New York State Public Radio Network. For copies, call 1-800-323-9262. That's 1-800-323-9262. Ask for program number 1609, or just listen on the web at wamc.org. And join us again next week at this same time for more news on New York State government and politics. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm David Gustina.
Statewide distribution for the Legislative Gazette is made possible by New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.